Welcome to Nice Ashes. I'm Mike.
And I'm Nate. What the heck are we smoking, Mike?
We are smoking the Flor de Oliva Original. And the cap on this is sweet.
Yeah, slightly so. I'm still mad about that cinnamon thing, by the way, from the Fireball. I tasted it. All right, so we've done the Maduro, the Gold, and now the Original.
Ooh. Kind of like that.
That's a vastly different
flavor. Yeah. That's kind flavor. Of a, tastes kind of like a broadleaf. It's got that, I don't want to say pungent in a bad way, but it's got some bite.
Oh, it's got bite. It's got bite. It's, let's just, for sake of PC-ness, let's just call it, it's a feisty cigar, right?
Yeah.
Seems feisty to begin with.
Yeah, we'll see. It. It's a good start.
I think it is a good start. I think so. Please, Mike, please don't tell me we're still talking about Sparked.
Oh, we are. It is wonderful.
Well, we read it. We're reviewing it. It's interesting because we did the entirety of the Dune main timeline, 8 books in one episode. And now this little 200-page book, we had to split across 2 episodes.
Well, I had to suffer, and I will fully admit I read this book in 3 sittings.
Okay.
Spread out by a month at a time or so.
Jesus. Yeah, it took me. So I said I checked my, because I log all my readings and stuff on Goodreads. I'm looking for more Goodreads friends so I can discover new books and things like that. So hit me up. But it took me 4 months to read this book because I read it and I was taking notes. And then I was like, I fucking hate this book. And I read a bunch of other things. And then I came back to it. And then I was like, I fucking hate this book. And I read a bunch of other things. And then it was kind of, you know, back and forth. And then finally I got so close to once I got past the midpoint, I was like, I just got to get this thing done so I can be done with it. I've been kind of dreading reading it. And I just wanted it done so we could talk about it and move on with our lives. I will say, though, that you can buy this directly from the Minnesota Historical Center, and it retails for $18.95. That's what's printed on the back cover. And I think that's probably about what they charge in the gift shop at the Minnesota History Museum. Mike and I both found it, I think, from the same eBay seller. It was about $4.
Yeah.
Maybe $5 with tax, right, or whatever. Yeah, so yeah. It's like $4.95 or whatever reasonable. It was.
Yes.
So if you libraries. Do want to read it, check it out from the library or find it on eBay.
Well, the copy I got was a library copy, and they obviously never rented it out because it's brand new.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine was also just brand new. It's not a library copy. There's no marks on it. It's just the thing. So, but at some point, Mike, I don't know what you think, but some of this stuff that we have that we just don't want, you know, maybe we'll do some giveaways, or maybe we'll do you want the copy? You want Nate's copy of Sparked later and whatever? I don't know, whatever. We'll see. Maybe there's something we can do with it other because I'm hugely opposed to just trashing books.
Oh, I was going to trade it in.
Okay.
I will gladly give it away to a listener.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe we should figure out how to do a giveaway. I don't know. There's got to be an easy way, right? I'm happy to send you my copy too.
Well, since the one listener, you can get 2 copies of the same book.
Yeah, Keith, that's you if your headphones are working this week. Actually, yes. I hung out with Keith recently, and he told me that we needed to stop making fun of his headphones.
Keith needs to buy IsoTune Pro Awares.
Yeah, right. He said he goes through them, he goes through these pairs. I don't know what he does with them, that he goes through multiple pairs a year, but...
That's crazy, because a pair of headphones for me would last me 2 or 3 years when I was doing construction.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Take better care of your stuff.
I don't know. People do what they want to do.
They do.
I support you and your headphone usage, Keith, and anybody else's who uses headphones. I've had good luck with my headphones. Usually when we're recording and I'm editing and stuff, I just have them hardwired into the computer because it's one less thing to kind of fuck up, you know, but they're Bluetooth as well and noise canceling, which I hardly use the noise canceling. I would use it on a plane though. Mine are over the ear headphones.
Yes.
Old school style. Where did we leave off, Mike?
We left off.
Black life and death in Minnesota.
Yes.
We both took notes.
Yes, we did. Do you want me to start, or would you like to start?
I'll start because my notes are dumb compared to Mike's notes. Well, they start getting better, right? So, like, the first few, I just kind of took general notes. Like, this is kind of what they're talking about. Because in my thing, it was, there's 36 of these things. So, I just need kind of a general sense of what each essay is. Because I was still under the impression we could do this all in one episode and not go into a bunch of detail. But it starts getting to the point where I started taking a lot kind of more critical notes. Because that's just the way that it is. But so, this one, the notes I took, the first three are just kind of dumb. But the last one is one that I think we're going to kind of tee off on a little bit here. So they're talking about like Dred Scott and the afterlife of slavery, whatever the fuck that means. And then this was the first one that mentioned Philando Castile and that shooting.
Yes.
But the last note I took was, I believe this author was giving birth, right?
Yes.
And all the nurses on the wall were white women. And she wrote, and this is quotes. This is a quote from the thing. The first sign that things might not be okay. It was like a warning in a horror film.
Yes.
Like, if that's not racist, man, I don't know what the fuck is.
Oh, this author self-identifies as a black identitarian. And
a black what?
A black identitarian. That is like a black nationalist.
Oh, okay.
And refers to white people as white boys. And Minnesota is the Great White North, and claims that crime committed against black people is 100% white, and that white people are responsible for all violence against black people.
Okay.
Which we know is, like, clearly not true, right? Also claims that black people are still slaves in America, even though she is a literal privileged elite in the richest country in the world.
Yep.
Complains that she has to interact with the police at all. And that racism was responsible for the early birth of her child.
Yeah, there were a I remember that too. Actually, the KKK sent out a general public announcement that they're going to have a chant session to cause her child to be born early.
Yes. So
specifically hers, though, nobody else's, just hers.
Right. So I mean. She also brought up Philando Castile, which we could talk about, which was a travesty, right?
Yeah.
I just made a note that the cop who shot Philando was Latino, not white, and that it was 100% about power dynamics. And it's one of the things that made me not support the NRA, because there was no support for Philando Castile's Second Amendment right. And he was totally within the boundaries of the law. So.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a.
Yeah. There's another essay later that the author spends a significant portion of their page and a half allotment bemoaning the fact that the officer that shot Philando was Latino. And like, why did it have to be a Latino officer? Why couldn't it have been a white person? Why did it have. And it's like, gee, oh my God. Why did it have to be anybody? Why did it have to be anybody? Nobody should have shot him.
Right.
Can we just call it that? Jesus.
There was a Hmong lady who cried about how the officer who was with, Derek Chauvin was Hmong.
Oh,
she was crying about that too. And it's like.
Yeah. Pick up a Pacific Islander or something. Like, why, God, why? Why did the. Like, how about just, why did anybody have to kill anybody in that altercation or in that situation? Like, can't we just be upset about that and not have to? Anyway, what are your notes on black life and death in Minnesota, Mike?
Oh, I've pretty much already gone over it. I would also like to add that this is one of the editors of this book. Sure. So.
Oh, was it?
We're going to see her again in the conclusion, if you will. So it sets the tone, right? This woman. Self-identifies as a racist, uses racist terms against white people, and then claims that all crimes against black people are committed by white people, even though we know that's not true, right? Like, somehow.
This Christmas, it was like a warning in a horror film. I was going to give birth, and all of the nurses' pictures on the wall were white.
Right. I would also
like to know. It's a white Christmas for my child. This Christmas in theaters. Come see racism, but it's not because it's against white people.
I would also like to say that the hospital she mentioned that she went to is like an elite hospital. This is not where poor people are.
Why is it white? Why is it white? Why couldn't it have been anything other than white?
Yeah, yeah. So she's like going to the Richie Rich Hospital and then complains about the nurses not being
you've
black.
You've seen that meme, right, Mike, where it's like, if I win the lottery, I wouldn't tell anyone, but there would be signs, and it's just pictures of people getting health care.
Right.
But then, like, why does my health care have to be white? I have health care. It's paid for. I'm going to the fanciest hospital in the state. Why are they all white? Yeah. I hate this.
You go to the state where, like, the majority are white, and then you go to the rich people hospital, and the majority of the people in the majority white state at the rich hospital are white.
Yeah.
It's like, obviously, it's going to be that way no matter what hospital you go to, right? Like...
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. I've got a sense of hospital experience with our first daughter, and most of the actual doctors were white. There was one that wasn't, and he was a phenomenal doctor. But I never really thought about race, you know. But again, I'm white, and majority of people are white. And why, God, why does everybody have to be white in fucking Minnesota, where it's cold as shit? Like, who else would live here, man?
Right. The majority of the population is white. Probably most places, you're going to see a lot of white people. I'm just saying.
In Minnesota, anyway.
In Minnesota. Sure. Like, Minnesota. Like, of course. Of course you're going to see a lot of white people.
Like, I don't think Minneapolis, St. Paul even has, like, a little Italy, do we? Like, we don't have, like, a Chinatown.
Guess Italian what? People it's, are white, so even if they did,
it was it's fucking Scandinavia, people. Norway, all over up in this bitch. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Right. Yeah, yeah. People have, like, the Sons of Norway as a group here, okay?
Yeah.
Like a common group, like they're at the county fair for sure.
Oh yeah, they've got a Sons of Norway museum or something, right? Like you could go there and they do there's like a gingerbread house.
Oh, I've never every been to year, a county
it's
fair.
Like, it's the well, it's not a county fair, but they have a Norwegian like historical museum or something, and it's a bunch of bullshit. But they do have a display every year Christmas time where they do a gingerbread recreation of the Minneapolis skyline.
Oh, sure,
which is great, but you know, like whatever, you know. I guess that's racist now, and I can't go enjoy my gingerbread house. So
yeah. Why, a lot of these articles.
Why do Norwegians have to be white? What the fuck?
I read an article by a Somali person, not in this book, and they complained because they went to an Oktoberfest, and they complained that wasn't options for Muslims at the Oktoberfest festival.
Yeah, would you like some bacon with your Wiener Schnitzel or like
yeah, it's going to be pork products and beer. That's kind of what it is.
That's Germany in a nutshell.
that's like you're complaining about something that I don't know is kind of what it is, right?
Like, well, and on the other hand, like they're complaining about something that is celebrating those people's culture and diversity, and now you're complaining that they're not including you.
Oh, I think that this gentleman was one of those people that claimed that white people don't have a culture,
right? I understand what that gentleman was. I'm just saying that diversity, it goes both ways. And, you know, there's the people that kind of sarcastically say, oh, well, you're saying white, but I'm actually part Italian and part German. So I am two races. Where is your understanding or where is your, you know, and to some extent, like, how is that any different?
I mean, it's ridiculous, but everything's
ridiculous.
Ring of truth,
like,
right?
Well, like on the drop down for applying for jobs. Are you Hispanic or Latino? And if you put no, then they ask you what race. And it's like, oh, we've got Pacific Islander, we've got Asia, we've got Africa, we've got all these other countries. And then it's like white, not Hispanic, not Latino or something. And it's like, well, actually, I'm German, Norwegian, and Irish. So, and some Italian. Where is that demographic on your dropdown?
I
want to be fully represented.
Other. Anyway, we're going off on a tangent. We have a lot of book to cover here.
There's going to be a lot of tangents because, like, it all doesn't make sense.
It's very repetitive. And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, some of it makes sense because, by and large, in America, the Europeans, let's just say, haven't really been discriminated against unless you count, like, the first 200 years of the British rule of the continent, which is the Irish were discriminated against and put into, you know, poor slums and ghettos. And we did that. We kind of talked about that on our etymology episode, where it didn't refer necessarily based on race, but it was where the poor people went. And so that was like the Irish and, you know, in some cases, like the Italians, and they all had their own little like sections that they got sent to when they came through immigration, right?
Right. And their names were changed and made English.
And their names were changed and Americanized or Englishized.
Ben Franklin wrote about how much he hated Germans and how they would never assimilate.
Yeah. Yeah. And then World War II happened and he was proven right.
Every new group gets shit on in America. Like, that's not a good tradition, but it's a fact, right? Like, it's not a good thing.
And it happens in not just America, but it happens in companies, businesses, wherever you work, sure. Right? Like, the newest person there gets shat upon. Like, that's, like, you're brand new. Like, fuck you, basically, right? You got to earn your stripes or earn your keep or whatever it is, whatever the phrase is, modern parlance.
Right.
So it's not, it's maybe more of a human nature thing. I'm not trying to say it's right. I'm just saying, like, it has happened to a lot of racial backgrounds across human history. So, you know, but the next one is in transit.
Yes. This person is Filipino and they use the folks and Filipinx language.
I made a note of that too. Yeah. I said, what I wrote was uses a lot of X's, folks with an X, not an S, Filipinx with an X, S, and so on and so forth.
And this person is not heterosexual, and they've openly described how they want to kill and destroy white people and straight people. They also complain that the U of M has too many white people, again, in a state that's majority white.
Yeah, yeah.
And then somehow thinks that it's okay to commit crimes against white people, but any crime against a black person is white racism.
Yeah, so, I wrote something else down too. Like, this person was saying, like, multiple worlds exist at the same time and in the same place. So it's like,
oh yeah.
Like, how many drugs are you on right now when you're writing this thing? Like, if multiple worlds exist at the same time in the same place, but you're trying to make a point about this time and place and this world, like, why even bring that up?
Right.
Like, if this were a true essay and you revised it, that would be a bit of the essay that you might cut out because it undermines your main point of all the X's and things, right? And then this one also says that the author experienced, he said in the essay, the op-ed, that they experienced no overt racism, but still considers Minneapolis racist and settler colonizers. So they didn't experience any racism, but Minneapolis is racist and they're all settler colonizers.
And this is literally coming from an immigrant who came here to colonize and settle.
They're also an elite.
Yeah, an elite who came here to colonize and settle. Like, that is literally what that person's here to do, right? Yeah. I was born here. Yeah. They flew here. That's a fact.
Yeah. Are you about halfway with your cigar, Mike?
I am.
Me too.
I like it so far.
I like this one too. This one, I think I like it better than the other two.
Oh, I like it way more than the other two. It is full-bodied.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of tang to it.
Yeah.
A lot of flavor.
I wish for sure that the Maduro was like more like this.
Right.
So.
Yeah. This is good. Very good.
This is good. We're going to have to pick it up a little bit on these, I think, Mike.
Yes. All right. So everybody's going uptown.
Because I don't want this to be a 3-episode thing. It's a short fucking book.
Yeah. So everybody's going uptown. They complained. The whole story is about how they're complaining there's too many white people in uptown. They're going to these rich people bars in Minnesota, and there's too many white people there and not enough minorities.
In the one of the more expensive places to live.
Huh?
Well, uptown is one of the more expensive places to live in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, no, it's rich people.
We lived uptown adjacent in a rundown shithole for a couple of years in an apartment building. But we were like right there. But all the swanky high rises were literally next door. So we kind of like lucked into being there, but it was still too expensive and we got out of there as soon as we could. But it's not the college campus. It's not the U of M campus, but it's basically like frat boys that graduated and have like tech bro jobs or mommy and daddy's money. That's where they live. And then they go out and drink and make bad choices all across uptown. So.
Yes. And then she told a story about how a lower class drunk white woman
at the game
was rude to her. And then she shit on her and basically said that her being a lower class drunk white woman is her own fault, which is exactly the sort of thing that a lot of racists say. So there we go, right?
Pretty much. Yeah, I did write down, Ecology of M, predominantly white, that the social structures were placing trauma on the author's life. They came to Minneapolis from Chicago and got introduced to Prince's music, which I guess is important. Pushed the field by denouncing American empire, American exceptionalism, etc. And then the lady at the VFW complaining about Ecuadorians.
Right.
But you're at the fucking VFW, so...
Yeah, she's a lower class
white woman. You might as well go to the fucking trailer park and see what their grand scheme thought of life is, right?
Luna Lovers. Okay.
Luna Lovers, next one.
This person is a ridiculous person. They complained that they got drunk and abusive at Target Field and as a result got kicked out. They weren't just allowed as an elite member to just get drunk and
because
shitty.
Because the white woman's husband went to go get security.
Yeah. Got drunk and crazy and then got kicked out. Apparently.
But note, it wasn't the white man went to go get security. It was the white woman's husband went to go get security. So what's the race of the man?
Probably not white. Then complained about how she lost a job because she couldn't follow the fucking dress code at the job.
Yeah.
Like, so follow, like, the rules are the rules, right? And then denied that class is the root of violence and poverty. And then blamed poverty
on
race and gender, even though she's a rich person. So,
yeah.
And then she also said that Muslim qualifies as a race and that when the police killed a man who was schizophrenic, it was because of racism, not because of shitty police training to deal with people with mental health issues. So interesting perspective of a rich woman.
And I mean, that's interesting because one of the big things is police aren't trained to deal with that shit. And that was kind of the big thing that people wanted to talk about after George Floyd was police aren't supposed to be doing mental health checks on people. They're kind of there for when things escalate beyond the point that a normal, rational human being could interject.
Right.
You know, like they're not there to come in and be like, have you been taking your meds? I think you need to go see a therapist. What does your doctor think about this? They're kind of there for like, this crazy person pulled a gun on me and I need him to not be pointing the gun at me. And that's when they step in. Like it gets to that point where it's kind of a life and death situation. Like that's when the police get involved. And that was kind of one of the pushes post George Floyd was we need better kind of community support for these different things that they're not trained to deal with. But we'll talk about that a little more with the afterword because they're talking about like, where will we be May 25th, 2022? Well, it's 2024 and beyond May 25th, 2024. So we're not anywhere where any of these people wanted us to be, right? But they got so grandiose and fighty amongst themselves even that nothing could ever be done. But and I also wrote for the Luna Lovers one, it was very kind of confusing to read because they interjected song lyrics throughout the essay. For
very
artsy-fartsy reason. Yeah. So, you know, it's
not a surprise that she got fired from her job.
No. And this is all part one, which came out like right after George Floyd, but then they put them in this book. And then we're almost to part two where it's kind of like a retrospective more because these things were all kind of written at the time it happened. And then part two is kind of a little bit after the fact. But the next one is gesturing toward tenuous inclusion.
Yes.
Which sounds to me like they don't want inclusion. I don't know.
Well, they did call Minnesota a sea of white and called Minnesotans flannel attired white land.
That sounds racist to me.
I mean, if you replaced white with a different word, probably not. This person also wanted to start a no white community, but was not allowed to do so. And they did not want or need any white friends from Minnesota. They defended racism towards white students. They complained that there were not enough black students in school and that Minnesota social norms are white racial terrorism. And you have to remember, this is an elite immigrant colonizer coming here to be racist towards white people, right?
So, yeah. They came here from New York City. So it's like, and a lot of these authors lived in Minnesota after living like in California or New York City. And then like, oh, Minnesota's so fucking racist. And it's like,
or Chicago.
Well, or Chicago, yeah. And a lot of them said, oh, Minneapolis is one of the worst places to live as a black person. And I looked it up, and yeah, Minnesota's in like the top 15 worst places as a black person. But the stats are home ownership, basically. Like, that's the stat.
Right.
And, you know, you've got this population in Minnesota that's different. Like, New York City is truly, truly, truly a melting pot. Like, it's older than Minneapolis. It's the main point of entry for almost all of immigration to the United States since the fucking beginning. So, of course, there's more diversity in New York City. New York City is massive compared to Minneapolis. My wife and I went to Minneapolis or to New York City, and I had been there previously before. And I told her, I'm like, because she was complaining to me about how big Minneapolis is. And I'm like, you just wait. You have no idea. And we landed in New York City and had to go to our Broadway show, which is, you know, like very elitist and classist, right? We bought these tickets and then COVID happened and then got rescheduled and we saved up for all this shit. So, but whatever, you know, and so we go there and we land and we're like walking through and like I had seen all the buildings before and I'd walked all over New York City before. And she's like, oh my God, like there's streets in New York City that only get sun at noon when the sun is directly overhead. Otherwise, the buildings shade the street the rest of the day. And it's just, you can't comprehend it until you're actually there. Like you can see all the movies and stuff, right, that are set in New York City, but you have no idea of how massive and sprawling and how many different communities and races and all of that stuff are there. I mean, we went to Little Italy and Chinatown and all, and there's just, you're not there and there's not 90% white people like Minneapolis or whatever, right? It's very different, very different. So you come here and you're like, oh my God, everything's racist because it's all these white people. Nobody wants to live here, man. Like, even we don't want to live here. We fucking hate the winter. Like, we don't want to be here, really. I mean, yeah, I mean, we like the state, of course, for some reasons, but it's not ideal. It's not the best place ever, I don't think. But no, it's nice
I wouldn't
enough.
Move here. Like, I was from here, so that's why I'm here.
Yeah, and I'm from Wisconsin, same latitude, longitude type of thing, right? So similar, so.
Very similar place, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, do you have anything else about gesturing towards tenuous
inclusion?
Nah,
fuck that shit. Okay. Let's go to the next one. Learning the scales of music and diversity in my Minneapolis, which sounds like a very, very objective critique of Minneapolis.
Yes. So, we'll open this up. This is a woman whose mother was an elite international musician. She is Indian. And she opens it up by telling a story about how a teacher didn't believe her that she was from Minnesota in like 1994, which... Yeah. She's not. She wasn't born in Minnesota. And she said it was racist. It's like, well, you're Indian and you probably have a very strong accent that isn't a Minnesota accent. Like you can tell when you're not from here because we have a strong accent. It takes a lifetime to get that accent for sure. So how is it racist to notice that you don't have the same accent as everybody else?
Yeah. And I think some of this stuff, like, what is it? It's not really in Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, but if there's an elephant in the room, the best way to get rid of the elephant in the room is to address the elephant in the room.
Right.
And it's not necessarily racist or doesn't necessarily have negative connotations, but like, are you, you're from Minneapolis, but you don't sound like you're from Minneapolis. And it takes a generation or two to totally get that because, like, my grandmother was full-blooded German and she came over literally on the boat with her parents from Germany. So she spoke German, but she grew up in Wisconsin, so spoke like a Midwestern, but had the, let's call it the Fargo accent, right? Kind of.
Right.
Where it was... And that's where a lot of the Germans and Swedes and Norwegians ended up settling is, you know, Minnesota and Wisconsin. And Germans more so in Wisconsin. But that's where that kind of the long A and everything comes from, like the yeah, sure, yeah, betcha, and that kind of stuff. So if you don't sound like that in 1994 or whatever, just because they say, are you sure you're from Minneapolis? Like, how old was the author at the time? Because kids are not purposely trying to lie, but kids get confused and try and answer in a way that they think people want them to answer. You know what I mean? So it's not necessarily right. It might very well be racism, but it might very well just be like, This is a young child. I'm not sure if they're telling the truth or just trying to tell me what I want to hear, you know?
Right.
So there's some nuance in dealing with children.
There is, yeah.
But yeah, I also wrote down that this author said the kids would make fun of their smelly lunches.
Right, which is a dick move, but kids are assholes, so.
It's a dick move. Kids are kids. And then this author said that in elementary school, they went to a needs-based breakfast, and it was made up of primarily black students. And then I put something about scales of race, so I don't
know. Oh, she also told the story about how she stole from the school lunch program and then complained when she was scolded for doing so.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, like, this is all like, if all of these were written by Elon Musk, they would all make sense, but...
Right.
They're just written by similar level elites.
This woman is out of touch. She complained about India being generalized as a country without, like, reference to the diversity there. But then she, in the same breath, called out whiteness in America as if being from Oklahoma and being from Minnesota is the same.
Yeah.
Right? So she has no appreciation for the diversity of America. 100%
not the case. Because I've lived both places.
No, I've worked with people from all over the country, and we're not all the same. Right? No. For sure.
No.
And then she told a story about her mom getting hassled by the TSA, which her being an elite international musician had to go through the airport a lot. So I'm going to guess that of the thousands of times she went on the plane, at least one time she had a hard time.
Yeah. So. Elite international musicians carrying their instruments in the cases they carry them in, which are also, you know, popularized in mobster movies to carry Tommy guns.
Right.
You're going to get hassled. I don't know. You know, that's just how it is. I've been hassled multiple times when I was in college, when CDs were still a thing, because I had a metal CD case that I put all these CDs in so I could pop CDs in and out of my CD player on the airplane. But they all would always swab it as if it were a bomb because, guess what? It was made out of metal and had reflective things inside it.
Right.
And it's like, that's just a thing. Like, I don't know. They checked it and I was good to go. Thank God they didn't.
I brought a bowling ball onto the plane and they checked it because they thought it was a bomb because they couldn't see it through it with the scan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, they didn't strip you down and fillet you or something.
No.
Would that they could, but they didn't. And, you know, whatever. You just move on with life. I mean, these government agencies are not there to make anybody's life easier. It's just they're screening to keep the maximum number of people safe or to abuse their power, whichever one it might be at the time and day that you go through. But
okay, so the Minnesota paradox.
This is the start of part two, though. So this is part two.
Start of part two. Yeah.
Of the book.
So this person complained about being called a racist because they wanted to boost race more at the university that they were administering. Because they didn't have enough minority students, so they wanted to get more minority students by lowering grade standards, and they were called racist, and they whined about that. And then they also complained that Minnesota has a term called the outside influence effect, which basically most crime is committed by people who have recently moved here. And they said it was racist, but it's also true. So pointing out the true thing, which is that the majority of people engaging in criminal behavior are not from here, like we're not born here.
Yeah.
Is apparently a problem. So
Well, I wrote down that they use the term baked in racism, where the racism is just everywhere. So you don't need an individual racist. Like you don't need one person to be racist. Like everybody's just racist because it's baked in here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we made a big hot dish of racism.
Right. Which is fine because they're an elite. So they can just float above the rest of us and piss on us.
Oh, for sure. By. For sure.
Next one. What's understood?
Does it? Oh, what's understood? Don't need to be explained.
Yes, this one had a great story about the security guard that
you know mostly, what. And actually, this one I wrote in parentheses. I wrote that I liked this one. This was probably my favorite essay of the entire book.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So this one started off with the story about a security guard, and this person was moving furniture into their office at 9:25 at night.
Yeah.
And the janitor was there. Well, the security guard was there and asked them if they were the janitor. And they were extremely offended that the security guard did not instantly recognize her as being the power elite of the university that she was. And that the white scum security guard thought that she might have been at the same social class as her. And he did not instantly recognize her as his superior in the organization. It wasn't that he thought she was a criminal. At no point did he accuse her of being a criminal. He just asked her kindly if she was a janitor, which would be similar to a security guard at a university, right?
Yeah. Well, given the hour.
Given the hour, it made sense, right?
Yeah.
And then the same guy apparently shot himself and tried to blame a random black person that didn't exist.
Yep. Yeah.
And The whole thing was about how he was a racist piece of shit and not about how this guy was so deathly afraid of losing his job that he would rather make up a story than tell the truth. Because he's on the brink of fucking dire poverty, unlike her, who's living, you know, a luxurious life as a college professor, right? So...
Yeah, but on the same sense is they could be both could be true. He could be deathly afraid of losing his job, and he could be a racist.
No, that's very
because
true.
Because he claimed it was a black man that shot him. He could have claimed it was anybody. A hooded figure shot me. It's 9:30 at night. I didn't see the race. Right, like it's just a hooded figure that shot me, and that would have been fine. But it had to be a black man that shot him. And the key takeaway from this was what this author said was the cost of saving a white life is always a black or brown body. Which it, you know, it's not necessarily true, but if you're a racist, right, it's true because you would do whatever it took to save a white life. So in that sense and that viewpoint. And yeah, is this person entitled and an elite? For sure. But this one seemed to be the most kind of grounded essay of the entire book, I thought.
Potentially. I mean, it was definitely an elitist diatribe against...
Well, it's an elitist diatribe for sure, but there were some good points I felt like in there, right? You know, some perspectives that I could kind of get behind. Like for the security guard, he's trying to save his life. So he's blaming a black person, but it could have been any person he blamed. It wouldn't even have to be a racial thing. It could have just been a hooded figure at night.
Right.
But it was a black man that shot him.
Right.
But then they couldn't find the black
man. During her diatribe about this officer or the security guard, she also said that white people need to be destroyed so that people of color can thrive in Minnesota. So she is literally calling for mass extermination of white Minnesotans so that immigrants like herself can dominate our culture.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's my favorite piece of literature ever. I'm just saying, like, in the whole of the book, this was the least...
The genocider was the most reasonable essay.
Well, it had points that made me reflect on myself, despite the other stuff. So that's the point, right? And like you said, you were reading it critically, and I was reading it trying to be open-minded and give it a shot. And I think if you wanted to read any essay from this book and just one of them, I would suggest this one. Not saying it's a perfect essay, not saying it's a perfect anything, but this is the one that kind of made me, I don't know, take a step back and actually consider things from a wider lens. Whereas the other one seemed a lot of like whiny and like pulling random stats and, you know, like, hey, I'm an elite, but I chose to live somewhere bad, or this happened and it happens to everybody. But for me, it was racism, but everybody else is just everybody else. But so this one, like, yeah, I'm not saying the author is perfect. I'm not saying the essay is perfect. I'm just saying, like, in the grand scheme of this book, this is one that I actually didn't hate. So,
yes. The next essay was Minnesota Nice White People. And this was a bizarre one because they told a story.
It gets weirder. It gets about weirder from here.
Yeah. They told a story about the police during a blizzard rolling their window down and politely telling them that their taillight was out and they should get it fixed.
Oh, yeah. This one. Fuck.
Yeah. So it was very bizarre. And then they followed it up with a clerk at a store asking them if they needed assistance at a Lund's store. Like, she didn't say Lund's specifically, but clearly it was Lund's, right? By the description. Yeah. It was an elite grocery store, Lund's.
It's an expensive grocery store.
Expensive grocery store. So the worker at Lund's said, oh, do you need help finding anything? That was it. You're at a super expensive grocery store. They say that to everybody when you walk in. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and then she said that these were both incidents of secret racist gatekeeping, which is like, what the fuck? It's going on. The whole premise was that politeness in Minnesota is racist oppression.
Yes. Are you ready for my thoughts, Mike?
Yes, please.
Okay. So I wrote down, police and grocery clerks are nice, but someone has to pay the price for nice. And they were happy. This author was 100% thrilled to have the police officer tell him his taillight was out. He was happy, elated to be treated like a white person. Right? What he thought a white person would be treated like. Then he went back to his buddies, the local black people, and he goes, my local buddies warned me that nice doesn't mean good. And then he goes off on a tangent about how niceness is camouflage that allows social violence against BIPOC people. And the threat in Minneapolis isn't people who commit explicit acts of violence. No, no, no. It's those that are nice. that don't understand they're part of the problem. So what? If I'm explicitly racist, I'm racist. But if I'm nice, I'm subvertly racist. There's no way to win here. And this is where everything kind of starts to unravel in this book, because all of these essays get worse from here. Where it's like, what the fuck do they want? Do they want me to be nice to them? No, that's racist. Well, do they want me to be an asshole to them? No, that's racist. Do they want me to not see them? No, that's racist. Do they want me to see them? No, that's racist. Well, fuck you then. I don't know what the fuck you want. The next one is, it shouldn't be you or me, but especially not them. And yes, this is the number one guess the, you know, playing the pronoun game. Who the fuck are we talking about? Who is you or me or them? I don't know. You got two pages. Well, you got two pages to fucking figure it out, right? You got two pages, 36 essays, 200-page book. Fucking get make your point quick.
Right.
I'll head off. They start talking about W.E.B. Du Bois with their double consciousness. He's a filmmaker from a long time ago. Where did he come from? Where did he go? But two warring ideals in the same body. And this one, oh yeah, this one's great because a white woman asked what sport they play at the university bookstore. So they're going to buy, this author goes, oh yeah, I'm going to go buy all of my like notebooks and pens and pencils from the university bookstore. So if that doesn't tell you what economic class they're in, I don't know what else does, because you go to Walmart and you can spend a fraction of the cost of the university fucking bookstore to buy notebooks and shit. So a white woman asked this person what sport they played, and they answered, I'm here for my PhD. I got asked all the time when I was younger, and even still today, because I'm fucking 6'6". I got asked all the time what basketball team I played for. Is that racist? Is that heightist? It's just a normal thing. You look physically fit. You're in the university bookstore. What sport do you play? That should be a compliment. You look physically fit. They're taking what should be a compliment, even though it's like obscure. Like, what sport do you play? I'm here for my PhD. I'm here to exercise my mind, and you should know that by looking at me. But you're racist if you look at me and make conclusions. And then they make a huge point. I live 30 minutes from where Philando Castillo was murdered. Well, guess what? I live like 12 minutes from where George Floyd was murdered. You're in the fucking Twin Cities. You're 12, 30 minutes from anything. You know how many people have been killed in Minneapolis, St. Paul? You guess what? You're half an hour away from a lot of deaths, right? I don't know how to tell you this, but you're in a big fucking city. You're 30 minutes away from hundreds of deaths. Hundreds. There's a car accident just down the road. They died. Oh my God, I'm within 2 miles of a car accident. What do I do with my life? It's racism for sure. I live 30 minutes from where Philando Castillo is murdered. And then the author is like, I've never had an issue with police. Never, ever had an issue with police. But I go out of my way to avoid them when they're on campus. And then then it's not fair that black people have to live like that. You've never had a negative experience with police in your life, and you're just choosing out of racism to avoid police on campus. And then you're claiming it's not fair that black people have to go out of their way to avoid police officers, but you're just choosing to do it. Why? Oh. Are you doing like a field trip into the day in the life of a normal black person, or are you still living your elite black person life? I don't know. Right. I don't know.
Well, this woman admitted to being paranoid, and that her paranoia is triggered by Trump supporters and police. Right?
It has to be. And she called the police because her computer was stolen from her car, and the police looked in her car, and because they looked in her car, she thought they were accusing her of taking her own computer.
Right.
And that she made one wrong move, her family would have found out about her death on the news because she called about a stolen computer. They looked in her car, and if she would have made a wrong move in them looking for her computer in her car that had nothing to do with guns, drugs, or gang violence, they would have killed her, even though she's never had a negative experience with the police, which she explicitly said in the essay. Never had a negative experience with the police. I avoid them at all costs. I can't believe we have to live this way, but my computer is stolen. Then I call the police, and they search my car, and that means that I stole my own computer. My God, I help sales reps all day long, and I have to tell them that they forgot to put an email address in to a contact record, and that's why they can't email them. So I feel like the police doing that is not so much a race thing, but it's a people are fucking stupid thing. because people are fucking stupid.
Oh, dude.
And when you, why can't I email this person? Oh. You didn't put a fucking email address in there. That's why you can't do it. You didn't do the thing that sends the email.
When I help people troubleshoot, I begin at the beginning, right? With the simple shit. Because half the time, it's something that they just forgot to do. They know they're supposed to do it, and they forgot it. And they continued to forget it, and that's why they're calling me, right? It's not their fault, even. I don't even blame them. I do it, too. Everybody does.
My daughter, she's like, where's my stuffed animal that I want to sleep with tonight? Where's the last place you saw it? Is that racist? Am I racist to my own daughter? Because I'm at, like, that's what the police are doing. Oh, your computer was stolen. Where's the last place you saw it? In the backseat of your car. Well, let's look at the backseat of your car. Oh, my God, it's not there. That's not them accusing you of stealing your own laptop. That's not them trying to shoot you in the back of the head because you called them on a laptop issue. That's like trying to find something that's lost 101. Where's the last place you saw this? Well, let's look there.
Right.
Guess what? It's not there. Let's start this complaint form then. Let's do this. Like, come on. That's not...
That is basic troubleshooting. Like, did you restart your computer?
You know, yeah. Like... And we do this on the podcast all the time. Mike's like, oh, everything's real choppy. Mike, when's the last time you started your computer? I was like 3.5 weeks ago. Maybe just restart that then. Maybe just restart
That's usually it, guys. I'm not going to
But that's me being racist towards Mike. That's me being racist towards Mike, and I should check my privilege.
I help people troubleshoot, and I tell them to restart their computer, and I don't restart my own fucking computer.
I mean, it's the classic response, right?
Right, it is. Yeah.
Did you try it turning it on and off and back on again?
Yep. Clear the cache. So, yeah.
Which does ridiculous. Work a surprising amount of times, but...
Yeah, it's shocking.
No wonder people say it to us all the time. Do you have anything else on that one?
No, because it's like just a woman who's paranoid, who gets triggered by everything, and...
Yes.
She admits it.
I mean, she admits it, that it's like, you're calling about a laptop, they're not coming in, guns drawn. We're going to find whoever stole... No, it's...
Yeah, the people who wrote these essays, and this is just a general statement about, like, these 36 people.
Yeah.
They're all clearly very intelligent, but they also all clearly do not do critical self-analysis because they admit to, like, having a perception problem, and then they blame all white people for their perception problem that they just described in their own words. Like, how about a little critical self... Like, look back at yourself, right? And see. Yeah. But yeah, there's no self-analysis whatsoever. It's hilarious.
Do you want to skip ahead a couple, or do you want to go through each one?
If we go through each one, we're only going to do this book for the rest of our fucking lives, bro.
Okay. I want to go talk about, because I've only got like an inch and a half left of the cigar.
You have that much left? Oh.
Okay. Sorry. I want to go do Whoop Whoop. That's the sound of... Of Da Beast.
Okay, I will. Okay, got it.
All right. So this one is written by Jason Mark Soule. And he wrote this whole essay about how the police have been harassing him his entire life. And they've been harassing him and his friends and this and that. And he didn't do anything wrong. The police just kept harassing him. And then the book is like, yeah, he's a professor here. And he's a formerly incarcerated abolitionist or abolished. Did they call him abolitionist? They want to abolish the police and prisons and stuff. And so I looked him up, and he's a fucking drug dealer and gang leader. So he's writing this whole thing where he's like, I don't know why the police are harassing me. Probably because you're fucking selling drugs and a gang leader. Maybe mention that.
A triple felon.
Yeah, if you're writing a fucking essay, you'd goddamn better disclose that you're a triple felon, that you're a drug dealer, former drug dealer, and former gang leader. I don't care if that you're a professor now and you've somehow gotten to the elite class, but goddamn, you don't go and write a whole essay, and it's like 2.5 pages long, right? But you don't write an essay saying that the police are harassing you for no reason. Oh yeah, the police came and harassed me and my buddies for no reason. We didn't do nothing, man. You're fucking selling drugs and a gang leader.
Yep.
That's what the police are supposed to do. They're supposed to come after you.
Also,
I'm glad you turned. Yeah.
So he literally is the guy, the outside influence crime. He came from Chicago to Minneapolis to sell drugs in his gang, got caught, went to prison.
Yeah. And then the police are racist.
Yeah. The police are racist. It's like,
You're the
gangster
problem.
From Chicago who came to Minneapolis to sell drugs to people.
I'm glad you turned your life around and can now write a 2-page essay for a book, right? Good for you. Most drug dealers can't write 2 pages, but good for you.
Yep.
But fucking disclose that at the beginning or else everything you wrote is just trash. It's bullshit. It's bullshit.
He also lied. And when he was describing the police, he said they had assault firearms. Police don't carry assault weapons, guys. They do not carry assault weapons.
But you know what? If you're a drug dealer and gang leader, everybody carries an assault weapon, right?
Yeah, he probably had assault weapons. But
I know that. I'm saying if you're reformed now and not a drug dealer and not a gang leader, and you're writing about the time when you were, you can say, oh, well, you know, I was a drug dealer and gang leader, but the other drug dealer and gang leaders that I knew that were white didn't have the same level of scrutiny from the police. Then at least we're all on the same page here. But you write this whole essay, well, what the editors are calling an essay, what I would call an op-ed piece. You write this whole thing about how you're being racially profiled by the police. And then you don't ever mention that you did prison time. And the editor at the end mentions that you were a formerly incarcerated abolitionist, making it sound like you were put in prison because you wanted to defund the police or prisons, when in reality, you're a fucking drug dealer and gang leader.
Right.
So that doesn't leave a good taste in my mouth. Like, I'm reading this book and it's supposed to be, how can we fix Minnesota? How can we fix policing in America? How can we do this? And we've got a whole essay here from a fucking drug dealer gang leader who's saying police are racist towards me and they're harassing me through my whole entire life for no reason whatsoever. It had nothing to do with drug dealing or being a gang leader.
Right. Now, I would like to say, we're going to go back. So, yes. Wild Justice in Life and Death, which is a couple before the one we just covered, right?
White Justice in Life and Death?
Yeah.
Yep.
From there on forward, I'm not sure if you picked this up, but I did. Almost every author capitalized every ethnicity, like black and brown.
Except white.
So these people who believe in microaggressions are purposefully being racist towards white people. Like they are literally in print diminishing white people to subhuman because all the other races get capitalized, but not white. They're not good enough to be on the same level of respect.
It's better than that, Mike.
What's that?
They're trying to say that Minnesota Nice is a microaggression towards anybody who's not white.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And they're claiming that while they themselves are perpetrating a microaggression by not capitalizing white.
They are purposefully doing it, too. It's not an accident.
Oh, I never said it was an accident. I'm saying it is hypocritical.
They don't view it as hypocritical because they think most of these authors view white people as subhuman.
I understand what these authors are thinking, as just indicated by our former drug dealer and gang leader friend.
I want to bring up finding myself in a racialized world.
Yes, because they have you, Mike. Have you found yourself?
Yes. They talk about, was this the one? No. Yeah, well, it is. They defended the Somali clan system, which is like a crazy, like racist system in Somalia that's caused their civil war. But then they also criticized police for a raid on a person named Dalal Id. And they had a gun battle with Dalal Id because he shot at the police. And he was a gangster who was, of course, trading in illegal firearms. He's like a Somali warlord who came over here and continued being a warlord. And then they said that this was evidence of black people being viewed as worthless when he opened fire on the police in the middle of the street.
Yeah, I remember that one. And I remember there was a few stories where it was like this person of color shot at a police officer. And because the police officer defended themselves, they're racist.
Right.
And at that point in the day, right, if somebody's shooting at me or shooting at a police officer unprovoked, you're going to get shot back at. What is that? Every force has an equal and opposite reaction or something like that, or every action has an equal and opposite reaction. So it has nothing to do with race at that point.
Right.
I do, because I think I only have notes on two other ones.
Okay.
But I think this one is, I don't know if
Minnesota.
I can say,
is that your next
I
one?
I don't know if, no. This is, I don't know if I can say like chef's kiss, but this is like chef's kiss of the hypocrisy of the entirety of this book. This one is called A Reflection on Racism, Police Violence, and Abolition. And so they have this like grand scheme of abolishing prisons and police, but they none of these people, these PhDs, these elite upper class people, regardless of race, none of these thinky people ever set forth in this book how you could actually defund police and defund prisons and have a society. Like, none of them actually outline that. But this one here, Reflection of Racism, Police Violence, and Abolition, the author witnessed, literally witnessed, a black man striking a black woman. Witnessed this.
That's right.
Witnessed this, but refused, even at the urging of their friends, refused to call the police for fear the police would kill the black man. This is a black man beating a black woman. But because they didn't want a police officer to kill the black man, who's very clearly abusive, would not call the cops. But it gets better than that, Mike. It gets better.
I know.
And I know you
know. I have notes on this,
because,
too.
Because someone else actually did call the cops. And what did the cops do? They came in and killed everyone. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's not what happened. That cops came in and de-escalated the situation. Because the cops are actually trained to de-escalate situations when they're not being shot at by fucking gang leaders. So they came in to what's a domestic dispute, de-escalated the situation, and everything was fine. But the author of this book was saying, I didn't want to call the police because I was afraid the black man was going to get killed. Well, the author was a woman, I believe. Yeah. So you're not going to have female solidarity and stand up for your sister over there being struck by a man? That's a huge no-no, an ultimate no-no. Like, people shouldn't be hitting people. Men shouldn't be hitting women. But you're not going to call the police because you think they're going to come and shoot him? But he's hitting a black woman. He's hitting a woman. Like, wouldn't you call the cops on that?
Well, that's
no.
That's
no.
Part of your racist ideology, because in white culture, woman beaters getting roughed up or killed by the police is socially acceptable to us. Like that doesn't bother me. Like, that's okay. In white culture,
if you are either
beating up your girlfriend or your wife and the police come and you resist and they kill you, there's very little sympathy. basically zero.
Literally none.
Yeah.
Literally none. I mean, I've got too many fingers on my hands to count the number of women I've hit, which is zero, by the way. Zero. So zero sympathy for a man hitting a woman.
No.
I'm part of the man. Like,
yes.
they're the aggressor, they're the bad person. You don't just hit a woman. Well, really, you don't hit anybody. I mean, that should be the ideal. Is you can go through your entire life without having to hit somebody.
Ideally.
So. It's not de facto, but I mean, that's the ideal. Like, you shouldn't have to get physical. You shouldn't have to do that.
So.
But that's why the cops are there, to de-escalate situations that would lead to that.
Yes.
But you don't call them if you're racist. I mean, if you're afraid they're racist. I'm confused. Why are we not calling them? We like men hitting women if they're black, but we don't like it. Well, we'll talk after the episode, Mike. You can fill me in on how this all works.
Yeah.
But the last one I have here for me and my notes are on the precarity of safety. And this person was like really against the Minneapolis Police Department. And this was a Dalal Id one. But he shot at the police and returned him. And then the author's son was like, that's no reason to kill him. And the author's like, you're right, son. You fucking shot at the police.
Yes.
They're gonna shoot back until you're no longer a threat. That's basic training. They train that in concealed carry classes, is you return fire until the person is no longer a threat. And oftentimes that means they are dead.
Right.
And you can definitely take that to the extreme, like who you claim is my friend, but is really not. But the one in St. Cloud who laid the trap for the teenagers breaking into his home. That's taking it way too far.
It's way too far. I can't remember his name, but yeah.
But he is not a police officer. But if you shoot at a police officer, they will shoot at you until you stop shooting at them, which oftentimes means you're dead.
Right.
Regardless of race.
If you're a gangster trading illegal weapons who opens up a gun battle in the middle of the street with a cop, you know what's going to happen. Everybody knows it's a bad idea.
Okay? Yeah. Like, there might be police that are dead, but there's more police than you and you will die. So,
right.
I mean.
Yeah. So, and then they were, that same author was angry that they went and raided his home and frightened his elderly parents. It's like, well,
yeah,
they're living at a gangster's house. Like, They're lucky to be not in jail.
They're lucky to have not also been shot. I mean, honestly.
Right. Exactly. So.
Not. I mean, I didn't mean that in a racial way, but like you raid like Ted Bundy's house or something.
The police are going to raid that place. Like they could have been accidentally shot.
Like it has unfortunately. To be. Yes.
Right. So I would like to make some honorable mentions here since we're coming to a close.
Do so. I have final thoughts too, but do so.
Yes. May 29, 2020, We Are Not Okay by Enid Logan. This person used all small letters for all the races. I wanted to make a note of that.
Okay.
They mentioned that a bunch of black victims of police violence, and every single one of them was like legit. They didn't throw in any goofy fucks that were like criminals. It was like all people that were like legitimately not like the victims, right?
Yeah, like and Breonna then, Taylor.
The whole letter. Yeah. Breonna Taylor and Philando Castile. And then that woman that was mysteriously found hanging in a jail in Texas. You know, like these people that are not involved in any criminal activity. And then the letter was about their personal experience and their thoughts. And I thought this was going to be what this whole book was, like kind of reasonable, like stuff by college professors. And I really appreciated it. It was a nice breath of fresh air amongst this slew of shit. And then the very next one was Brown, Minnesota, which you and I talked about. This person is literally an immigrant from Mexico who uses an X in Latino, who has a trans 6-year-old who blames whiteness for her children's paranoia and lack of understanding of civics, right? So this woman claimed that her 6-year-old did extensive internet research before her son came out. And it was just all the markers of somebody with severe mental derangement, abusing her children and blaming society for the problems that surround her.
Ew.
And it was kind of, you know, horrifying. And she described the school that she runs, and it's only for Latinos, and half of them are over the age 18, and 10% are homeless, and all this shit. And then she blamed white people for all this, like, stuff going on at the school that she runs that is only for Latinos. Like, what? It's very bizarre behavior.
The buck stops somewhere with that school, and it's not with white people. Right. I'll tell you that.
And then she self-admitted to wanting to flood Minnesota with immigrants to, like, basically de-white the state.
Yeah.
Which, again, is, like, literally an illegal alien who wants to destroy America, a.k.a. Minnesota. Like, it's very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, on one hand, America is a giant, in theory, a giant melting pot.
And it should be a giant melting
pot. Well, and it should be. And it should be. And a lot of countries are. But the difference is that the people that come here, you can bring your own traditions and your own things. But just because you don't eat pork doesn't mean you can ban bacon for everybody. But you're free to not eat bacon. Like, nobody's going to force you to eat bacon. But you can't stop, say, me from eating bacon. Right. Just as a very simple analogy or thought exercise. You do, like, America does have, it's not very strong. It's not as strong as, say, 1930s Germany. But we do have a sense of national culture where you're supposed to be free to pursue what you want to pursue. That doesn't mean you get to change it for everybody else.
Right.
You know, and when you move in places or when you go places or even moving from where we used to live to down to the cities, like we had to change to fit into the cities a bit because it's a different environment. It's a different vibe. It's a different whatever. So you always kind of have to do a little bit of adaptation. If you want to become a citizen of the United States of America, you're going to have to say the post-1950s Pledge of Allegiance, which includes the God shit. But before 1950, the Pledge of Allegiance had nothing to do with God. There was no one nation under God. It was just one nation indivisible. It had nothing to do with God. But because commies didn't like God, they added the God thing. Because that prevented communism, of course, right? We all know that. Heavy sarcasm.
So, yeah.
But I did want to mention two other things that were brought up in the latter part of the book here. One is they were talking about how a lot of the riots or some of the riots rioting after George Floyd in Minneapolis was not caused by diverse people.
but we can talk about that. I got one.
Real quick.
Yeah.
But by white supremacists. So the Boogaloo Boys, I guess, did plead guilty to coming and, I guess, burning the police precinct.
Yeah, there was the person that started the fire at the police precinct was later shown to be affiliated with the FBI and white supremacists, for sure. But they were like a FBI asset. So
some of the stuff that happened here that was blamed on minority groups were actually white supremacists or FBI plants.
Right.
So there is that.
Quite a few of these people also bragged about their luxurious lifestyle during COVID and about how the riots disrupted their, like, lazing about their house and homeschooling their kids.
I'm not trying to vindicate the authors of this book, but I'm trying to say that this is a very complex topic, and that's why it took two episodes, because one, the arrest and killing of George Floyd is contested already, especially in Minnesota.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And then you have these white supremacist groups that just are, they're literally sitting there waiting for some kind of, like, racist thing to happen so they can go in and make it seem like the minorities are the ones ramping things up to 11, but really it's them doing it to make the minorities look bad. So I just want that to be understood, that it's not like we're saying, at least here on the podcast, that these elites had anything to do with anything. They sat in their expensive homes with their homeschooling or private tutors and had time between, like, you know, being treated nicely at Lunds and Byerly's or Whole Foods or wherever they shop and being treated nicely by police officers about their taillights and other things. They had time to sit and think and ruminate on what racism is in Minnesota, and they really couldn't find much other than Minnesota nice has to be racist somehow. So when white people are being nice, they're also being racist. And that's kind of their thing. But there definitely have been racist things that have happened, meaning the white supremacists have come in and tried to escalate things to get it blamed on minority groups. And then the other thing I want to talk about is there was an essay about from a Dakota.
Oh, are you going to talk about George Floyd was murdered on Dakota land?
Well, everything here is Dakota land, I guess.
At one time. Yes.
At one time. But they mentioned that there's a law that says it's illegal for Dakota to live here. And that law is still on the books in Minnesota. Yes. It's never been repealed. So it's still illegal for Dakota to live in Minnesota, which I think is not right. It's not a right law to have on the books. Like,
no,
that
I agree.
Should be gone. That should be gone. I don't agree with everything that person said, right?
We're going to talk about her because this is my conclusion here. I want to talk about
yes,
Kate
we're going to do Mike's conclusion, and then we're going to talk. Then we're going to talk about the Florida Oliva OG.
For those of you who are depressed about the future, we're going to talk about Kate Bean, who is the director of Native American Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society, and was also one of the leaders behind the name change from Lake Calhoun to Bede Makaska. So this woman told a lot of stories, blah, blah, blah. She's very active in the public, and she's the one that talked about the law in Minnesota, which is bullshit for sure. She told a story about bringing her 4- and 6-year-old around to see the destruction after the riot.
Yeah, I remember that.
And her 4-year-old called the public employees picking up the mess, Wasiku, and told her mother that they were cleaning up the mess they made. And she agreed with her 4-year-old. Now, this is the future we have in Minnesota, that this woman who's leading a public institution, making policy changes, she's teaching her children that public employees are the ones who destroyed the city and that it was appropriate to call them Siku, which is a racist term to use against white people in the Lakota language that equates to people who steal fat, like thieves, basically. Yeah. So this 4-year-old from her mother, who's making public policy, is learning to look at white people who are public employees trying to help the community as pieces of shit. And that's how that woman who's running a part of the Minnesota Historical Society views me as a piece of shit because of the color of my skin. And that's
but they'll
the
also be the first
place.
One to tell you that it was white supremacists who came in and burned the city down.
Right. Yeah.
But then the people that actually live here, but the Boogaloo boys or whatever the fuck don't live here. They came in to spread shit. But then the people that live here that are paid by the state to clean up everything, but not really like riot mess. Like, that's like the other duties as assigned portion of the job.
Right.
And they come in and they have to clean the shit up. But then you know that it was like, it wasn't them. It wasn't the public. It wasn't the state workers.
No.
That did it.
No.
You're,
according to KB,
on one hand,
it was. According to KB, it was.
But like on one hand, you're claiming it's all these white supremacists from out of state coming in to like burn shit down and make this bigger than it actually is. But then the state workers that actually live here, that didn't like bus in or fly in, they're the pieces of shit that burned everything down. Like, why would they clean it up then? They'd be on strike, wouldn't they? Like, if they burned it down,
right?
They'd be on strike.
I don't even disagree with the narrative that it was people who bussed in that were causing the riots. That's probably true, at least partially true, for sure.
You know? Well, they partially pled guilty. True.
Right.
I mean, at least one of them pled guilty, so
right.
it's not true.
It's not, but not you've true, got, for sure.
I mean, that's the shitty thing about today is you've got all these special interest groups that are just waiting for an event to happen so they can shuttle everybody in and make it worse than it actually is.
Yeah, encouraging your four-year-old to use racist terms against public employees who are cleaning up the aftermath.
Yeah.
And then convincing your small child of some weird paranoid theory that public employees are going out and burning the city down. That's crazy. And this woman
is
a leader in our state. She's creating public policy for the rest of us.
Yeah, that's crazy. And the other one that's crazy is the six-year-old trans who's transitioning. Wow. That person's crazy too.
That person has mental delusions. Like, she's
a lot of these people. Yeah. A lot of these people do. They have delusions of grandeur.
Yeah.
A lot of these people in this book have those delusions of grandeur. And when we first started reading this book, initially when I saw it on the shelf, I was like, this is absolute trash. I got to send this picture to Mike so he can get a good laugh out of it. But then we kind of started talking about it and we're like, we should actually like read this thing, right? Like it's not that long. We should read it. And had this book been a series of interviews with people who knew George Floyd or who were of the same socioeconomic class as George Floyd, this would have been a fantastic book. This would have been a great book. I don't want to hear about the upper elite and what they ponder with their charcuterie boards and wine tastings. I don't care what they think about this whole thing. I want to know what George Floyd's neighbors thought of this. I want to know what the people on the street actually dealing with this shit. The police told you your taillight was out. Fuck me, that racist pig. Good right. God. They could have wrote you a ticket right there. The fuck is wrong with you? They could have wrote you a fucking ticket right there.
It's a blizzard. It's dangerous to drive without a taillight. They kindly told you about it so you didn't get injured in the blizzard.
Like, they could have wrote you a ticket right there.
Right. Yeah. They weren't checking to do, you what, a 50, for a DUI.
You're supposed to do like a 57-point check of your vehicle every time you get into it. You're supposed to like turn on your lights and your blinkers and your hazards and walk around the car before you even drive it to the fucking grocery store a block down the road. This police officer could have written you a ticket and you couldn't have defended yourself. You'd have to pay the fine. But this fucking asshole, this racist asshole, told you, hey, your taillight's out, get it changed, have a good day. That fucking racist asshole. I hate that fucking guy. The fuck is wrong with these people? Give me a story.
In a blizzard. Again, it's in a blizzard.
Yes.
So it's legit dangerous to not have your taillight.
Man, I understand. I'm not arguing any point of this. I'm saying if this book would have been interviews with the downtrodden black people in North Minneapolis or people like George Floyd who lost two jobs due to COVID, this would have been a great book. Instead, you get this upper echelon elite class of people, regardless of race, but you get this upper echelon perspective on what happened, which is bullshit because they live in a world of nannies and shopping at Lunds and Byerly's and Whole Foods and homeschooling their children, and I have time to actually like drag my children out of my house where I homeschool them and have nannies and things, and I can show them where these fucking low-level state employees are fucking cleaning up the shit that they made, which they didn't actually make.
Call them a racist term and then blame them for the fire.
Yes. Whatever. Yeah. Like, this guy got called out of his home. He's getting overtime pay or something right now to clean up the fucking bullshit that other people from out of state came to do or incite people in state to do. But he's cleaning it up so that, guess what? When we need to go to the Lunds and Byerly's down the road, all the debris from the riots is gone. So we can still go get our organic avocados and shit. But that fucker's a racist right there cleaning that shit up so that we can drive later to go to our grocery store. Or, right. You know, for our nanny to go get that for us. So it really was like, a bad taste in the mouth the entirety of the book. There are maybe two of these that were good. Like, you liked that one, you said, and I liked the other one, even though they both weren't perfect.
Right? I liked more than just the one. We skipped a few. I made notes.
We skipped a few.
When I liked, because some of them made really good points. There was a couple of them that talked about, like, the class structure. And then throw in a couple race things here and there. But it was mostly about, like, the class-based system that is fucking people over. And I'm like, on point. Like, I think everybody can get behind that.
Which is not indicative of Minnesota.
No, but it's, like, indicative of everywhere. Yeah, so it's not specific to Minnesota, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so there are definitely good points made. But I feel like if they would have actually gone to the same socioeconomic class as George Floyd, and even if those people weren't going to write an essay or an article, like, have an interview with them and then write something based on what they said.
They could have had a ghostwriter with, like, George Floyd's neighbor.
I mean, that would have been more impactful to me than hearing a bunch of, you know, PhD students that came here briefly, lived in a ritzy neighborhood, shopped at ritzy places, and then left because it was too racist. And they went back to California because California's not racist. New York City's not racist. Chicago's not racist. But Minneapolis is.
Right.
Like, I don't believe that.
Well, you just need to believe people of color instead of pushing your white colonialist framework on the literal colonizers coming to your homeland to change it. You know, just accept that they're doing what's right for you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, the main point of this book is Minnesota is Dakota land, so I need to believe anyone that's Dakota, and anyone who's not Dakota is a colonizer. So that is, what, 95% of this book I don't need to believe.
Yeah, unless they're people of color, and then they're de facto not colonizers. No,
unless they're Dakota.
They're
Dakota, because this is Dakota land. So you can't... Hey, what the fuck was up with that poem at the end? That was, like, the worst poem I've ever read in my life. That was the worst poem I've ever read in my life.
What was up with the fucking people who were, like, calling northern Minnesota Trump land and how it triggered them to have to drive through it and they were afraid for their lives? There's multiple people that said that they were afraid for their lives driving through northern
Minnesota. Well, they're all big city people. They're not used to living anywhere diverse, right?
I would bet
you... So they're like,
oh,
I'm a diverse person, but I can't live anywhere diverse.
I would bet you a paycheck that you could take a naked woman who does not speak English and drop her in any town in northern Minnesota. We've said it before.
Yeah.
Anywhere in northern Minnesota, drop her. Nothing will happen to her other than somebody will see. They'll get the police there to be like, hey, lady, come with us. They'll find an interpreter, whatever language she's speaking, and they'll clothe her and take care of her. Nothing bad will happen. Nothing.
You know what, Mike? I'm going to take this a step further. You will be shocked. I'm going to say you could take a naked woman minority, drop them anywhere in America outside of a major metropolitan area. Don't drop them in a major metropolitan area. Drop them anywhere rural, anywhere in America. Any fucking where in America, they will be unharmed. They will be clothed. The police will help them wherever they go.
I can't say anywhere, but I can say Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, and Wisconsin, because I've lived in all those places, and there's no fucking chance anything bad would happen to them there.
I'm saying outside of a major metropolitan area.
Don't drop them in Vegas.
Don't drop them in Minneapolis. Don't drop them in New York. Don't drop them in Chicago. Don't drop them in L.A. I'm saying, like, don't drop them in a major metropolitan area. Drop them anywhere else. Anywhere rural in America, they will be 100% fine.
Okay. Even Fargo or Duluth. Maybe not
even
Duluth.
Fargo,
for sure.
Even
Fargo.
Woodard, Oklahoma.
I lived
Oklahoma.
In the bad parts of Fargo. Nothing bad's happening to you.
even Woodard, Oklahoma. Drop them there. They will be fine. Bumfuck Florida. They will be fine. Not Orlando. Anywhere else.
Yeah. Boondocks, Florida. For sure. They'll be fine. It'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, nobody's going to do anything to them. Nobody wants to do anything bad to anybody else. It's not part of the culture. Like,
it's not part of the culture. I think by and large, like, human nature is most people don't want to do bad things. I think in big cities, though, you get this kind of, there's so many people here, I'm anonymous, so I can do bad things if I want to.
Right.
I don't know if that's true, but like I said, this book is not a recommended. I think if you want to read it, that's fine. That's on you. I wish it was more than I wish it was even half of what it proposed to be. I think it could have been there had they interviewed actual people of the same socioeconomic class as George Floyd and not the overly educated elites, which we talked about.
If they would have had even some of the police officers, maybe some of the National Guardsmen, some of the people cleaning up the streets, some of the protesters, right?
Yeah.
Some of George Floyd's neighbors, maybe some of his coworkers, right? Maybe some of his family, you know?
Anyone. Literally anyone. There were a lot of authors. There were a lot of authors in this book that were like, I wanted to be at the protests. But everyone I talked to said, well, your grandmother's really ill and you see them all the time. So you shouldn't come down here because there's COVID everywhere. And yep. It's like, well, that's the most elitist thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yep. One of them was like, oh, if I was younger, I would have been throwing bricks through windows with the protesters.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what?
if you can't put up what you're writing, don't write it.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I can say what I want about the Uvalde Police Department, but I wasn't there.
My husband was lazily filleting my boyfriend in the morning, and we heard as a threesome that,
George Floyd. I couldn't go down there and actually, like, legitimately do anything because I'm at risk for COVID or my mother is at risk for COVID. And there was one that was like, oh, yes, I used to live in Minneapolis, but now I'm in California and I didn't hear anything about it till the next day. Can you believe it? Nobody told me till the next day. And I put off watching the video for 5 days. But once I finally did decide to watch it, I was super enraged and everybody's racist now and I'm angry. And ready to do something. Well, it took you 5 days to watch it.
Was that the woman who went to Berkeley and Stanford?
I think so, yeah. And it's like, and then like what? So the final thing is, where will we be May 25th, 2022? Fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
Because
nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. They wanted to fund the police. They want to abolish prisons. Well, how does it work? Nobody knows how it's going to work. Nobody has said anything in this book anyway about how any of that shit works. And they're like, I always tell people we need to defund the police and get rid of prisons. And they always look at me like I'm stupid, but they don't understand. Well, tell me then. Tell me how that will work. How would that work? I'm waiting. Nobody's told me how that will work.
Right.
Do I think that would be a great thing? I think that would be a fantastic thing. I think we should have less criminals. I don't think you should go to prison for a drug thing unless you harm somebody else. I don't care how fucked up you are. You live your life. But you still have to have prisons or something for people that kill people or harm other people. What's the solution? You tell me. I'm waiting. I thought this book, the people in this book, the book doesn't promise to tell you how to defund police. It doesn't give you any action points, which I think is another failing. Like, that's what the forward and the prologue should be, or the epilogue should be. Like, we have all these stories of how things should happen. Now, here's what you can actually do. And it's like, no, here's more things you can read. But you've got 36 stories from elite people that don't live the same reality that even a ton of white people live.
Right.
And then how do we change it? Well, if I'm Minnesota nice, I'm racist. If I'm an asshole, I'm racist. How do I fix it? How do I fix the white privilege? This book doesn't care. These 36 authors don't care.
Well, at least one of them said that you fix white privilege by exterminating the white people. So that's their solution, is genocide.
Yeah, suicide's illegal because you can't destroy government property.
Yeah. And they definitely, most of them did not want to talk about class as a function in
this
book.
No, they don't want to.
Because they're the elites. They don't want to talk about
that. They are the elites. That's the issue.
Yeah, they're the elites. Yeah.
That's the issue. They're not close enough to George Floyd or what his life was to adequately describe it or to adequately call for action. Like, that's what this, I mean, besides the voices close to George Floyd, the other main miss of this book is there's no call to action. There's no, hey, if you're a white person, you can go talk to this organization or you can donate money here or there. And most charities are scams anyway. But this book literally has none of that. And there's further reading for sure, but it's like, well, I guess I can sit there and ponder what the ideal utopia would look like, but this book didn't give me any action points to help achieve it. It didn't even say, like, there wasn't even a sentence in there that said, go down to your local Black Lives Matter chapter and give them $5.
Right.
There's nothing. There's no action points whatsoever. So this is just a thought experiment. This has nothing to do with actually fixing anything. And it's just people that want to bitch and moan that nothing's changed, but none of them have any action points to fix what they're bitching and moaning about, which I think is the ultimate failing of this book.
Well, they certainly don't want to alter their own power and privilege. And they know that they are at the top of society. I mean, the people who are authoring these essays are as far away socially in the class system from me as I am from George Floyd. Probably more so. I'm a lot closer to George Floyd than I am to, you know, that fucking Native woman who's teaching her kids to be racist towards municipal employees.
Yeah, right? Or the one that's, you know, forcibly transitioning their six-year-old.
Yes, the one who's forcibly transitioning their six-year-old. My six-year-old did extensive research on the internet before coming out. Like, I don't remember being six, really, but...
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't think I was doing a lot of extensive research at six. They obsessed over the Boogaloo Boys and the Proud Boys. And it's like, they're both meme groups, aren't they? Like, I don't really know a lot about them. I'm not involved with that shit, but...
No.
Yeah, like...
But they're organized groups that will definitely send people to escalate situations.
Oh,
for
sure.
To make other people look bad. And it's proven because they pled guilty, so... At least in the Minneapolis instance. So, like, that part... I mean, some of the stuff in here did, like, open my eyes to some things... But that's probably like 5 to 7% of the essays.
Oh, some of the essayists were definitely legit. Like they were.
Oh,
the thing that I thought 100%. It was going to include, right? Like some of I even made the note in the second half. Some of them were pretty good. Some of them were bad.
Oh yeah,
obviously.
Oh,
like wild, but.
But I feel like Y36, like the editors are just like, let's get everything we can. And they only got 36 and they're hoping for like 100. They could pare down to 50 or something. And they're like, well, we only got 36. So let's publish 36. I don't know.
Right. The fact that one of the editors was a black identitarian and another one of them, or the person running the show at the Minnesota Historical Society is like openly racist, like really tells you what it's about for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I mean, I told Nate when I finished it that this book is on the same spectrum as The White Man's Burden and Mein Kampf. Like, it's got that vibe to me.
Oh, add the extra thing, Mike.
What was the extra thing?
Birth of the Nation.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I did. Well, I'm gonna look up my exact text. why not? Why not?
Well, why not? And this is a book that had potential. And what it ended up being was 36 op-ed pieces by the elite well-off class to basically make a cash grab at George Floyd's death. Because nowhere in the book does it say portions of the proceeds of this book are going to the George Floyd Fund.
Oh.
Nor does it say anything in this book is going to Black Lives Matter. So this is basically an elitist cash grab.
I went to the web pages for a number of the authors after I finished.
Yeah.
And it's to pad the resume. So they can say, published here, 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 and here. And a lot of them had that sparked right on there. Like it's to pad. Because if you don't publish, you perish in the educational world, right? The elite professor world. So they need to have publishing credentials.
Well, and especially in their realm, if they don't publish something that's anti-white, they're no longer part of the upper echelon.
Right. So my exact quote, which is I had literally just finished it.
Yes.
Sparked is on the spectrum with White Man's Burden and Mein Kampf possessing all of the nuance of Birth of a Nation. And that is true. I don't know what else to say.
100% true.
At least from my perspective.
What do you think? What do you think of the cigar, Mike?
I liked it. I put it, let's see here, because now I forgot. We've been yakking. Let's not talk about your score. I put it at 3.75. I thought it was good.
I put it at 3.25. I thought it was good. Not overly exceptional, but better than the middle of the road. So
it is. It had a good bite. Very consistent. No flavor change. Didn't get sour.
Yep.
It's well worth the money. For sure. Well,
I smoked it all the way down to my fingers. I relit it twice towards the end because it went out twice. And upon relighting, it was just as good as before. So very solid stick. Again, it's tough because when you look at something like this and then you look at like a V660 or a Siri R, like it's no contest.
They're
but it's better than it's better than average.
It is, but at a cigar shop, you can still get this for $5. Online, you can get it for $2. Where a Series R is going to be $10 to $13 at a cigar lounge, and then you can get it for $5 online. So it is literally two to three times more expensive, and it shows.
That makes
sense. It shows.
Yeah.
So they're not really the same
They're not the same. I mean, you know, it's this one was very good. I mean, it's not that I wouldn't recommend it, but it's kind of one of those ones that I don't know how prevalent it is in cigar shops even. You know what I mean?
Right. I would recommend it if you're looking to fill your humidor with a decent cigar that you're going to be able to get for like $2. That's a good cigar.
Yeah, if you order it online, it would be a good one. For a couple bucks more, you could do Serie R or V660, I suppose. So it's kind
right,
of
right, but
of
over
things.
20 sticks, now you're talking $40 to $60 more.
That's true. Yeah, I mean that's fair. That's fair.
Right. I mean, I'm trying to frame it. Like you can get this, or you can get a Kentucky Cheroot. They're not the same style of cigar. They're about the same price.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So if you're not a fan of the Kentucky Cheroot, this is a great alternative, I think. Because I
like
my
this
Kentucky
is a little
Cheroot,
bit.
But it's not for everybody.
Oh, I love Kentucky Cheroots, but this is a little bit longer smoke. So if you want the, you know, full cigar smoke length with something that's not offensive and not going to get sour at the end, then this is a good choice. If you're not going to do the V660 or the Serie R or the Edge or even an Edge Corojo, because what's an Edge Corojo compared to this? Similar price?
Like a Fuma is going to be about the same price. Yeah.
Yeah. So
like a Fuma is probably a better cigar, at least on par.
Yes.
If not better, probably better.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like this one's good, but I would hesitate to recommend it over like a Fuma.
I would not recommend it over a Fuma.
No. Yeah.
I'm just
trying to explain my rating where it's like it's better than middling, but it's not as good as a Fuma if we're going just based on price.
Right.
Price
like point. As a comparison, I put the Maduro at a 3.25 because it is better than a Dark Shark. And I put this at a 3.75. Yeah, I believe. Why don't we just internet the show, people?
All right. Well, I put the Maduro at a 3.5, and that's not right.
I put the Corojo.
The Maduro was fine.
I put the Corojo Fuma at a 4. So this is a 3.75, right? It's better than the Maduro. It's not as good as the Fuma.
I'm going to go back and change. I'm going retroactive. I'm changing the Flor de Oliva Maduro to a 3.25 from a 3.5, and I'm changing the Flor de Oliva OG, whatever the fuck they call it, to a 3.5.
There we go.
Instead of a 3.25. Because this one's definitely better than the Maduro or the Gold.
I agree.
And we like the Maduro better than the Gold, but we both like the Oliva Classic more than either of the other two. So that's what that is.
All right. Well, we can recommend, but under very limited circumstances. If you see it at your local lounge for a few bucks, it's worth a try for sure.
Pick one up, try it. It might have different flavors than you're used to. You might like it. I like it. I don't know that I like it enough to fill my humidor with it, given that the edges are similar price point, but not a bad one to have on hand just to kind of hand off to somebody. Because I've found that since having a cigar podcast that people come to me and kind of expect me to have cigars ready to smoke, which by and large I do.
Right.
By and large I do, but I don't, you know, everyone's like, oh, do you got, hey, you got any more of those Moon Trance? And I don't. I need to get a big stock of Moon Trance because that's what everybody wants.
Yeah, they're epic.
Yes, yes. But, you know, if you get into cigars, you will find yourself in situations where people expect you to have cigars that they can smoke, which is fine. It's good.
Right.
But, you know, then you have to stock it. So there you go. Do not recommend Sparked.
No, it's trash.
Some of the essays are fine. They're decent. If more of the essays would be like the ones that we enjoyed the most, it would have been a probably moderate to slightly good book. But they were all kind of written from voices that, because of their elite status, kind of ring hollow. Because they don't deal with the same circumstances that George Floyd did. And they tried to bring in all these extra... Like, was George Floyd a giant advocate for LGBTQ plus rights? Because why am I reading about a 6-year-old trans kid in a George Floyd book? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway.
It could have been essays about periods of George Floyd's life. And it would have been so much better.
It could have been anything other than it was. And it would have been better.
Yeah. Could have been stories by people that knew him throughout his life.
Yeah.
And that would have been so superior Right.
Well, and he was working as a bartender, so it could have just been black bartenders during COVID.
Yeah, could have been.
Like, that would be a lot more relevant than what we got, but...
Right.
What do you do? I'm not the publishing company, so if you do want to read it, get it from your library or find it on eBay for super, super cheap. Otherwise, the Florida Oliva Classic, not a bad stick. Not a bad stick at all. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on Instagram, Facebook. Check out our Patreon if you want. We've got a new set of the stick list up, which is the next 5 cigars we're smoking. You can get that if you're a Patreon backer, and you can get the same cigars we're smoking. We give you the dates when they're going to be aired, so you can smoke the same stick when the episode drops, if you're so inclined. Otherwise, we have some behind-the-scenes stuff on our little bit lower level of the Patreon, so there's tons of content out there. If you want it, if you don't, just give us a like, a follow, write us a review, even if it's bad. Just give us a review on wherever you listen to us. That helps us out. And again, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Be safe. Have fun.